Blog Talk Radio.
But we are making a stand, and we're waking everybody up that 9/11 was an inside job. And you are the minority. You are the cowards who don't know the truth. You're the people that serve this evil system. You're the people that serve a system that hurts innocent men, women, and children. Not just Iraqis, not just Afghans, not just Africans, but the people right here in this nation. You serve a new world order that attacks and feeds on you. And I'm here to tell you that you will be defeated. Your hours are numbered. We've got the energy. We've got the life force. All you've got is evil backing you up. All you've got is greed and liking to look at yourself in the mirror. Because deep down, the New World Order is a pot-bellied, chicken-necked ninny. And all the armor and all the weapons are nothing. You are nothing compared to good. You are nothing compared to life. And you will be defeated. I want the individuals out there, I want free humanity to turn themselves loose, to cut the chains loose, and to use the end of that chain to slap the New World Order right upside the head. You've got the power. You want to know who can defeat the New World Order? It is you. You're the individuals that are going to be able to defeat this system. You're the individuals that are going to be able to take down the New World Order. It doesn't matter if Ron Paul wins. It doesn't matter if they rig the election. What matters is that we're starting to stand up. We're starting to move. We're starting to find our legs. We're starting to build our muscles. We're starting to realize that we do have power, and we can work together, and we can take action, and that the naysayers are a pack of weak liars who have never had any successes in their life and who are upset and frustrated to see us beginning to have victories against tyranny. They don't have any respect for themselves. They don't have any vision. And they don't have any will. And they sure don't have any of the power that shines out of God's soul and energizes all life in the universe. They have wed themselves to death. And they will crumble, and they will fall, and for eternity, we wed ourselves to life, and to everything good, and everything that flows.
Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement. And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side, he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than death, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war. Because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material compositions. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. He said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals.
All right, everybody, how you doing? My name is Joseph Gibson. We're on Blog Talk Radio live, unedited, unscreened. I don't censor my callers like other shows do. I don't want to know what you want to talk about before you call in. I'm not going to block you. I'm not going to keep you on hold for an hour and a half like other shows do. My goal is to unite the alternative media because this is the only place where you're going to get unscreened and uncensored truth. Not like Fox News, not like NBC, ABC, CBS, that are all owned by the same person, the same bankers around the world who are programming you to believe a certain way. And here we go again. We got another mass shooting here in Florida, a tragedy, another tragedy, another mass shooting. The last count, I believe, was 50 dead. And ISIS is supposedly claiming responsibility for this shooting. This whack job walked in there and just shot everybody up. What, they were sitting ducks. I mean, they're not allowed to own a gun. Only the criminals are allowed to own a gun. So when the criminal wants to say, hey, I'm going to walk into a nightclub tonight or a school today or courthouse, whatever. You know, we all know the law-abiding citizen who's just out living his life. Maybe, you know, had a hard week at work and wanted to go out with his wife to a club on a Saturday night. You know, go out, have a couple drinks, dinner maybe, who knows. Go out dancing, whatever. They walk through those doors, yay. We're law-abiding citizens, right? We're not allowed to carry a gun. We're not allowed to. But the criminal who walks through that front door, do you think he's worried about that sign that says gun-free zone? Do you think he's worried about that sign that says no weapons allowed? No. So he walks in there, this nut job, this Muslim piece of crap who believes in his magic carpet ride that when he dies, he's going to get 144,000 virgins. Yeah, that's what it says in the Quran. That's what it says. I read the Quran, a book of philosophy that makes no sense. That's what the Quran says. Disagree with me. I don't care. I read it. I know what it says. And any Muslim who wants to debate me, I could shut you right down automatically. Okay? Because Prophet Muhammad was never foretold. Prophet was foretold in the Bible. Every prophet. But we're not going to get a theological lesson here tonight. We're talking about the news story that happened, and I want to get to my guest that I invited on tonight through my good friend Terry LaPointe. But we're going to have to address this tragedy because there's a lot of talk already. Here we are talking about guns. The gun did it. The gun jumped out of this man's pocket, killed everybody. The gun is evil, and we need to ban guns. You know, so this way here, when we could take all the guns away from the law-abiding citizens, like we do in the city of Chicago, where over the Memorial Day weekend we had 69 shootings. There's a gun ban in Chicago. You're not allowed to own a gun in the city of Chicago. You know that? But yet we had 69 shootings. How is that? So does that make you feel good when you walk into a school or you walk into a post office and you see this is a gun-free zone? You see that sign? Does that make you feel good? Scares the hell out of me. I actually prefer not to visit those places. But you know what? I'm a law-abiding citizen. And I don't want to break the law. But you know what? I'm going to protect myself and my family no matter where I go. I don't care what you say. The Second Amendment says very clearly, shall not be infringed. Those words are very clear. Shall not be infringed. Okay, what does that mean? Look up the word infringe. Look up that word shall not. The phrase shall not be infringed. Okay? And then you want to talk about a militia. Well, the militia, that was 300 years ago. No. The militia is you, the American citizen, when you were born. Because the founding fathers of this country knew and understood it. Tyranny. They understand government. They understood it. They understood regulation. They understood corruption. They understood power. They understand what it meant to have control over another human being or group of human beings. That makes you feel like you have power. And control corrupts. Okay? That control always corrupts. So we need to understand the Constitution, even though today we really are, not under the Constitution anymore because it was hijacked after the Reconstruction Act. We addressed that a few shows back when I had members of the Republic on this show, and they explained to you, you don't have any constitutional rights anymore, and it was actually hijacked thoroughly and respectively and knowingly when you started to enter into adhesive contracts with the government in the year 1933 when they outlawed your money. Because we all know we have to have money and we need to barter with something. And we all know gold and silver was the honest monetary system. Gold is gold, silver is silver, weight and measures. The Bible talks about that also. Okay? Like I said, I don't want to get into a Bible lesson. I'm just letting you know. Start looking for it. Go into your Bible and you'll understand. All right? But anyway, back to this Florida incident real quick. The ISIS is supposedly claiming, I don't know, ISIS didn't call me and say they claimed it. That's what the government's telling me and that's what the mainstream is telling me. I don't know. Could have been some whack job. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Al-Qaeda, that was an IBM program that they made into a terrorist group. I don't know about ISIS. You know, all these people. You know, look, we don't know really what the truth is. We live in a time of deception. We live in perilous times, okay? We live in times of deception, and we're all becoming aggravated in our own way, whether it's through our banking system, whether it's through our electric bill, whether it's through social services, whether it's through this criminal government stealing our children, and many other ways, whether it's through our medical bills. We live in perilous times, and the Bible spoke of this. You know, brother against brother, daughter against mother, son against father against son. The Bible spoke of this thousands of years ago. And we know what we're running into today. We see what's happening. And here we go. We have now over 50-plus people dead. They were sitting ducks, like I just told you. You know, you want to go out on a Saturday night with your wife or your girlfriend, you know, college kids or whatever. You're out having a good time. And somebody walks in there and blows 50-plus people away. I believe the number is 58 now. I'm not 100% sure. But last I heard, it was 50. But there's more that are in critical condition in the hospital. Imagine that, 50 people shot. Do you think that one of those 50 people were able and lawfully able to own a gun? Could have stopped this madman? Do you think so? I know if I was in a club and I saw a whack job come in here and start blowing people away, and I was able to carry a gun inside that establishment, I'd blow his ass away. You know? Think about it. Think about it. It's common sense, for God's sake. Common sense. The law-abiding citizen knows. It says gun-free zone. They're not allowed to bring a gun, so I'm a law-abiding citizen. I can't carry my gun in that place. It's against the law. I don't want to get arrested. You know, I have bills to pay. I have a job to keep. You know, but criminals don't care. The criminal wakes up whenever time he wants during the day to go sell drugs, go rob, do whatever he does, collect food stamps for free, you know, get all the benefits for free. The criminal don't care, but yet our politicians, what's their damn agenda on this? We're going to analyze this on Thursday a little bit more. I don't want to keep my guests waiting, and my guest through Terry LaPointe, you have to press 1, and I'll see an icon next to your phone number. You have to press 1, just one time, and I'll put you on if you are here tonight. I have about 45 people on the line tonight. So I'm scrolling through the phone numbers. Just press 1, one time. That's all you have to do. And this is a guest I invited on tonight. I'm scrolling down the numbers. I have about 45, 46 numbers. I see the icon. I hope area code 403 is my guest. I'm going to connect you in 1 second. I'm going to tell you right now, I want you to tell your story, give your name, and the floor will be yours. And tell your story, because I feel this is an important story that needs to be heard. And before I connect my guest, I want everyone out there to know. I know the chat room's a little slow. Blog Talk's been having problems with the chat room. Even my fellow co-host and friend and fellow Blog Talk show host, the Captain, he's been having problems with Skype. A lot of people use Skype. So his shows have been screwed up lately, and now I have a message on top of my screen right here real quick. Due to an issue with the Skype to host connections for premium members, you will need to connect with Direct Connect via telephone to host your show. For more info, please email support@blogtalkradio.com. So if you're using Skype, you're not going to be able to get through, and that means we miss those of you who use Skype, probably about 40% of your audience. I don't promote Skype. I always told everyone from the beginning, I won't use Skype because it never works properly. I know when we have calls overseas, hey, you want to be on the program? You know, hey, buy a phone card or I'll call you. I can call you for free, but I won't use Skype. It's unreliable. And we did have a guest last show, Christina England, who did a good show on vaccinations. She's world known. She's written a book, and I want to pay tribute to her. That was a great show we did, the last show. Christina England. You need to go back and look up that show. That was a great show. Anyway, real quick, if you have a question for our guest tonight, my supporters, and I know there's some on, and I want to say hello to Joe and Sebastian, Florida. I spoke with you tonight. I'm glad you were able to make it through tonight. I see you on the phone line. I'm glad Mike from Wisconsin's on. Of course, we have Joe from Meriden, Connecticut, Bitbanker. And we've got Elizabeth Rondo on from Yalesville, Connecticut, and many, many more. And, of course, Bridget from Reidsville, North Carolina. So we have people from all around the country listening tonight. So I'm going to go ahead and connect my guests, and the floor will be yours. And, again, if you have a question, 657-383-0616, you press 1. And you'll be connected. I'm going to go ahead and connect my guest right now. Area code 403. Area code 403. Is this my guest? Hello.
Yes, this is David Steppen and my wife, Colette Steppen. We're on the line here.
Very good. Yes, David. Yes. I saw your Facebook message. And look, I want you to go ahead and tell your story the best you know how, because you have many people listening, and that's what I do here. I allow people to tell their story. So introduce yourself to my listeners and tell your story.
Perfect. We'll do there. And thank you very much for having us on. If I were to tell the full story, it's quite long-winded, and there's an incredible amount of details to it. It's become an international matter. And so I'll give kind of a cold note and version of it, and then we can go from there, just because I'm sure you don't have an hour or two or three to cover this. Basically, what's taken place is our tragic situation of the loss of our son back in 2012 has become quite an issue that's been largely embellished, a lot of misinformation put out there to serve an overriding what appears to be pharmaceutical agenda that was initially aimed at basically holding parents in Canada criminally liable if they didn't choose to vaccinate and anything happened with their child, that there was a vaccine preventable, or that was a vaccine preventable issue. Whether the child passed or whether there was just harm that was inflicted, the parents were now going to be held criminally liable. And that's where they were taking our situation, because we chose not to vaccinate based off of the education that we had undergone, seeing that there was far more risks than there was benefits with it. And so that's where they were going with this. And I went and met with some of the leading experts in the field on vaccinations as part of our defense. We employed them. We came up with quite a good defense on the matter. And all of a sudden, the Crown prosecution decided to drop that altogether. And we thought maybe they were going to drop the charges altogether when they saw that it was really a losing battle for them to proceed with that and to try to establish that, you know, our son's life could have been preserved had he been vaccinated. Well, they went full bore ahead with it, with the court case. And we were completely sidelined when we saw how the mainstream media took just bits and pieces of information, embellished it, made it out to look like we were extremely stupid parents, I guess you'd say, or a bunch of idiots, and then proceeded forward with this court case where they spewed it internationally. I mean, we were getting messages, hate messages and love messages from Australia, New Zealand, I mean, England, you name it. We were all over the place. And so what it looks like they're doing with our situation where our son passed away, and it was a tragic situation, and it was quite unexpected as well. They're now taking it forward and trying to destroy naturopathy and anything that does not fit within the allopathic realm of medicine.
And David, if you might, before you carry on, I had actually the former Prime Minister of Canada on this show a couple months ago. Maybe I need to introduce you to him, because he does have political ties, David Kelleher, and maybe he can help you. But go ahead, carry on with your story. I just wanted to put that in there, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. So do you want me to go into a brief history of what took place and then go from there?
Sure.
Okay. So in late February of 2012, our son Ezekiel developed what appeared to be croup, just a standard upper respiratory tract infection. And we looked into it. We thought, you know, do we take him to the doctor? Do we not? And upon further research and consulting with a registered nurse who's an emergency room nurse, she said, yeah, it appears to be croup. And basically, you know, for that, with my children, what I did was, you know, took them out, got them fresh air. My wife, Colette, decided to look into it further online and found that there was no medical treatment for it unless the restriction in the airway got bad and then you'd go in for a steroid shot. Well, the restriction in the airway never was bad. So we had that as a consideration. Okay, well, if it does get worse, then we go in and we get the steroid shot. Well, this proceeded for about a week, which is typical of a cold respiratory tract infection. It persisted for about a week, but it progressively got better, and by the end of the week, it was gone. His energy levels were returning. He was beginning to resume his normal activities, And so we took him to church on Sunday. And so this all began the Monday before. We're now taking him to church the Sunday in early March of 2012. The following day on Monday, he was taken to preschool, parent preschool that my wife would attend. And resuming fairly normal activities. It was a little bit more cuddly that day than normal. So he wasn't 100% normal by that point, but he was getting there. And the next day, I'm on a business trip by this point, and my wife gives me a call and says, oh, I think it was, you know, too much too soon, where we began to take him out into public again because he seems to be more tired today. And I said, okay, well, you know, make sure that he gets enough rest. And so my wife was doing that and set up the laptop in the bed and put him in bed and allowed him to watch cartoons throughout the day. Wednesday rolls around, and my wife gives me a call. I'm about 1,000 kilometers away, or about 600 miles away on business. And she says, oh, I think he might actually be getting sick. Okay, well, you know, maybe put him back on these different natural treatments that we typically use with our children, and we see good response from them. And so she did so, and Thursday rolls around, and I get home at about noon, and I go and look at him, and I say, oh, well, it appears that he's getting the flu. You know, he just has, you know, an overall appearance of, you know, basically kind of a look of nausea. It's what I call lethargy. I'm no medical professional, so my definition of lethargy may not be the same as a doctor's, but basically he appeared to be more tired than normal and was content watching cartoons, and he appeared to have a little bit of stiffness that would be akin to what you see with the flu, where you get the achy muscles and joints. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe he's getting the flu. It looks like he's starting to get it, but there's nothing that says that, oh, he's really got the flu here. His symptoms were not severe. They were low-lying. And so we persisted with the different natural treatments that we were using. And by Friday, he's improving. By Saturday, we removed the natural treatments because it appeared that there was no necessity for them. As his symptoms had almost 100% subsided. Sunday rolls around, preparing for a meeting that evening. And it was actually a meeting for to challenge a bylaw that was on our books. And it was quite a draconian bylaw that was alarming to many people. It was an emergency management bylaw that basically removed all of your rights in the state of an emergency, which was not clearly defined. So it could have been, the emergency could have ranged from anything, really. It was very similar to what Obama was putting through in March of 2012. The same basic bylaw, where you, basically it's a martial law bylaw. As soon as emergency is declared, you have no rights to property, you have no rights to actually to your labor.
Yeah, I know about the executive order or law that he had put in, which was a contingency of the Patriot Act. Of course, yes, we understand that.
That's right. That's right. So we already had a bylaw like that on our books that basically they could conscript you, they could do whatever they want, send you to a labor camp, take your tractors, take your homes. And we live in a rural community, so many of the farmers were really quite alarmed by this because many of them are very quite giving individuals, and we pull together when things go awry. We pull together as a community. We don't need to be the overreaching arm of government to tell us what to do and what not to do and basically become their chattel. So we my brother and I were heading up this meeting, and so I was preparing for that because it was the day following, and so I had to be up early, so I decided to go and spend the night in our spare bedroom, which is on in the basement level opposite side of the home, far enough away that I'm not disturbing anybody when I wake up. And so I went and did that, and I woke up early. And I went to this meeting, and we ended up winning. It was really quite successful. We found out during the meeting that it was these bylaws had been pushed through by the Alberta legislature. So our provincial government had pushed them through every municipality within within their region.
Have you looked into common law at all? The common law. Have you looked into that? Because I know Canada is a little bit observant. A lot. Like the Republic here in the United States, or the sovereign citizen movement, have you looked into that at all?
I actually won a court case back in 2010 based on those principles that actually got me flagged as an individual that basically the police should be alarmed about. So yes, I've looked into it, and I've actually Yeah, so I'm giving you a bit of a premise here as to why we would be targeted as individuals here, and why they would use us as the fall guys to kill, you know, more than you know, kill a few birds with one stone, right? So they can, you know, get their pharmaceutical agenda through here, and basically take us down at the same time. That's what it appears to be, and it's all over the court documents, these flags about us. And so, so not only did I exercise common law, but I was also looking into these issues that were going to affect the average individual, and was really quite concerned about it. My brother and I were. So we put on this meeting. We ended up getting the bylaw thrown out, and our next step was to go right to the Alberta legislator and take them to task on this issue where, you know, we have rights in Canada. We have rights as individuals, and we're really quite good people overall, I'd say, that in a state of emergency, we would look after each other. We don't need to have the government come in and control us. So we were going to do that. So I get back from this meeting at about lunchtime, and my wife is a little bit distraught because she'd had a bad night because our son Ezekiel didn't sleep very well and had began to revert. And she's 20 weeks pregnant at the time. And she's also distraught about the fact that that when I'm not on business trip, I'm taking up all this time, you know, preparing for this meeting. And so she says, well, you know, he's starting to get a little bit worse again. What do? Do we take him to the doctor? Do we not? So we have this discussion. And I didn't feel that there was anything to take him to the doctor, but it wouldn't hurt. But we live half an hour from the nearest doctor. So, okay, is there any other options? Well, my wife has a birth attendant, this registered nurse that she had been consulting with, and decide to have her come out and do a prenatal visit at the same time as looking at Ezekiel, and then get an opinion there as to whether or not we go to the doctor. Well, I come back from another meeting that we had in the afternoon, this time for regular business. I come back from that after having a discussion with my wife, and she says, oh, well, you know, our midwife said that you may want to look into meningitis just based because off the fact that as a registered nurse in the emergency room, she ran into a case about 2 weeks previous. But when I come home, Colette, my wife, is in much better spirits than she had been during the lunchtime visit that we had. And she's very reassured by the visit that she had with her midwife. And what was communicated to her was that if you were to take Ezekiel in to the emergency room based on the symptoms that he is showing, you would likely be turned away because there's nothing alarming here. There's nothing severe. And she took a look at, you know, checked his vitals, checked his heart, checked his lungs. Everything came out normal. Mind you, he began to revert. So he looks like he's getting those flu-like symptoms again. And there's some of that muscle stiffness that's appearing again. And so we decided to look into it. And what my wife came up with was, well, you know, there's a lot of overlapping symptoms of the flu and meningitis. So if he does have meningitis, based on the symptoms, based on the timeline that he's had the low-lying symptoms here, if it was meningitis, then it'd be viral meningitis, because if it was bacterial, within 24 hours to 48 hours, you're in a crisis situation normally. And now we're looking at 6 days of low-lying symptoms off and on. And so we had a discussion. We thought, well, okay, you know, so if it is viral meningitis, what do you do for it? Well, there's nothing that they really do for it other than using antivirals, which, you know, could be, you know, quite hard on an individual. But that wasn't really the premise of why we weren't seeking medical attention at that point. It was that there was nothing that was appearing to be severe. It seemed like a typical flu that a child would go through. He was cognizant. He was content watching the cartoons on the bed. And whatnot during
and,
the time.
And Ezekiel Ezekiel has passed away, correct? He passed away, correct?
That is correct. So we had this discussion on the Monday afternoon after the bylaw was thrown out and all that. And we said, well, okay, well, based on the information that we have, if anything begins to turn for the worse, we're going to take him into the doctor right away, you know, just to be precautious about this. And so we have this discussion. We make sure that he's taking these different herbal remedies. He has a great sleep on Monday night. Tuesday morning rolls around. We need to go to Lethbridge and to sign some papers to sell a house. And we're hesitant about it. Well, do we take him in? Do we not take him in? You know, how do we make him most comfortable? He's progressing. We don't want to compromise his progression in any way. We just want to get rid of this illness that appears to be like the flu, and just get rid of it, right? Now that it's been 6 days, we just want it gone. Our kids normally don't get that sick, right? They normally get very low lying symptoms. We're into nutrition and all that, so their immune systems are quite strong. So we're just kind of getting annoyed of the illness, and we just want to get rid of it. And so Tuesday morning rolls around. He has an improvement of symptoms. He's not fully better at this point. He still has some of the stiffness. And so we put him in the car seat. We get him ready to go. We decide, you know, we'll take him. We'll go get some stuff from the naturopathic doctor as well while we're there. Okay, so there's some benefit there. We put him in the car seat, and he's showing signs of discomfort being in there. And so he's not vocalizing it, which he was fully capable of doing. He's 1.5 years old. But he just looks discontent. And we're thinking, well, we have to drive an hour away, and then we have to drive around there, and then we have to drive an hour back. Let's just, you know, for comfort's sake, let's put him on the memory foam topper that he has in his mattress. Let's just take that memory foam topper, lay down the seats in the back, and make sure that he's as comfortable as possible. So we do that. We drive into Lethbridge. We sign the papers. Collette goes in first, signs him, comes back, gives me the instructions. I go in and sign him. Then we go to the naturopathic doctor. We get an echinacea tincture. I give it to my son, Ezekiel, and it seems to be quite responsive to it, whether it was just coincidence that he was going to start really perking up at that point or whatnot. It was shortly after giving him this tincture alongside all the other stuff that we were giving him. We were giving him his regular daily smoothie that had vitamins, minerals, essential oils in it, amino acids and all that. And we're giving him some olive leaf extract. So we give him the echinacea tincture, and within about half an hour of him getting that, his energy is increasing. Any signs of the stiffness were now 100% gone. My wife goes into a grocery store. I fall asleep in the back with him and end up waking up to him playing with my lip and him getting playful. And so we're at this point thinking, okay, well, wow, tomorrow morning he's going to be up and running. He's going to be back to his normal self. There's no signs of the illness anymore. He goes down for a nap. There's no presence of the illness. You know, when a child's ill, they can't hide it. It shows in their face. It shows in the way that they open their mouth to respirate easier, all that type of stuff. All of that was gone. He appeared to be completely on the mend. So my wife goes to a church activity that evening. This is now about 4 hours, 5 hours into him being, from what we were seeing, completely symptom-free. And my wife goes to a church activity that she wasn't going to go to just because she's the main caregiver. But now that she feels that there's no need, you know, he's not ill, and I'm just going to be checking up on him from time to time, she goes to it. She gives me a call about an hour into the meeting to ask how he's doing. I said, well, you know, he everything's fine. He woke up a few minutes ago, though, and it appears that he's just developed this curious breathing pattern. Nothing like the croup that he had before, but there's just a rhythm to his breathing. And I said, nothing to be alarmed about, but, you know, we're going to want to, you know, look into this. So when you get back, I mean, he's breathing just fine. He's getting oxygen. Like, so there's nothing alarming about it. And he seems fully cognizant. So I put him back down to sleep, and he maintained this rhythm to his breathing. And so she comes back, and we start talking about it. And when he'd wake up, I'd give him more fluids. I'd just continued pushing fluids. We were doing electrolyte drinks and whatnot. And shortly after doing one of the pushes of fluids, his respiration started to get bad. And so I phoned my father to tell him that that we were going to head to the hospital for him to meet us there. During the phone call, things escalated to a point where we wanted to phone 911. His breathing had just stopped. So I got off the phone with my father, phoned 911, and told him we need an ambulance. And I run out. We're in a rural area, so I run out to give them the county number on the front of our sign so that they can see where we're located in the county. And I get back in, and he's breathing again, and he'd coughed up some mucus. So at this point, we're thinking, well, maybe he aspirated some of the fluid that we had given him, and now he's just coughed it up, and now he's breathing fine, and he's breathing on his own. So thought, okay, I got, you know, I was on the phone with 911. I said, well, you know, I'm concerned about it because as far as I was aware, the nearest ambulance was half an hour away from us. And I'm thinking, you know, I've heard the horror stories about how they have issues locating different rural households, which was a common problem in Alberta at the time, and it probably still is a common problem, but it was definitely a common problem then. And in fact, a report was produced by the Health Council outlining this problem, saying if you live in rural Alberta that you're at risk if you end up in an emergency situation. So I was aware of these issues, so I just said, okay, you know what, we're going to drive him to the hospital, and we're going to get him there quicker anyways, and we're not going to run into a potential issue here. And so, and he's breathing on his own, and, you know, we're just thinking he just coughed up some mucus that he had, and now he seems to be fine, but we're going to take him into the hospital anyways as a precautionary measure. So we wake up our other son, we get him onto the vehicle.
David, real quick, I just want to let everyone know, if you have a question, let David finish the story. And if you have a question, by all means, I'm sure he may answer or I may answer. Let's just continue to pay attention to the story because it's very important. You know, Ezekiel is no longer with us, so this is important. So let's continue to listen to this story, and please be patient, callers and supporters. Okay, I ask you to remain on the line, and there's many people on the line, so just remain patient, and I'm sure we will get to your questions. Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
Nope, no problem. Thank you very much. So we began driving him to the hospital, and about a minute into our drive, he ended up going back into respiratory arrest. And so my wife began to perform CPR on him in the back, and I phoned 911 saying, we need to meet an ambulance on the highway. You know, meet us north of Cardston on Highway 2. And so I was giving them instructions as to where to meet us based on you know, where I thought their ambulance was located. But we have a phone with GPS, and they have the ability to do GPS tracking. The interesting thing was, 3 minutes into our call, we were driving through a small community, and we drove within 100 yards of where an ambulance was parked and ready to go, and it was never dispatched. It wasn't dispatched on our first call, which was over 3.5 minutes, and it wasn't dispatched on the second call, and we could have been, you know, or our son could have been treated by the ambulance attendants in very short order. Instead, we continued on a drive that would normally be about 25 to 30 minutes. And we were driving obviously a lot quicker, being that it's an emergency situation. And within 11 minutes, we ended up meeting an ambulance on the highway about 5 minutes out of Cardston, Alberta, which was the closest community to us that had a hospital. So we meet the ambulance. We pass Ezekiel off to the ambulance, the paramedics, and they take him in. And we're waiting, Colette and myself are both waiting in the vehicle with our oldest son, Ezra, and we're waiting for the ambulance to go. And they finally end up getting going. It was probably about a minute or two. I mean, time kind of stands still when you're in a traumatic situation like that. And they get about halfway to Carson, and then they stop again. We're wondering what's going on here. And then they start going again. And they get to the Carson Hospital, and when we get there, we're absolutely shocked. Here he was breathing on his own. And cognizant half an hour before, and now we're in the hospital and there's no response whatsoever from him, nothing at all. And nobody's really telling us much. I mean, really, we're giving a history and wondering how did we just come from him being symptom free for a good portion of the day, thinking that by tomorrow he's going to be running around and back to himself, to all of a sudden we're now in this crisis situation. From, did he aspirate? What did it have something to do with the illness that he previously had? What was going on here? And so we were in a complete state of confusion. And so I remember the doctor stating, hey, you know, don't lose hope. We have situations like this where, you know, miracles happen. Children fall under the ice for extended periods of time. And they come out of
miracles.
It.
Miracles. The doctors are depending on a miracle. They can't figure anything out. They're depending on a miracle. Unbelievable.
That's right. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, that's got nothing to do with our situation. You're talking about an oxygen-deprived child under the ice, you know, that's frozen, and they're in basically a catatonic state or whatnot where, you know, the blood's not really pumping very much, so they're not becoming that oxygen-deprived. I'm thinking, what does that have to do with our situation? Well, it wasn't until we got into the court system after they charged us that we found out
charged you with what?
Well, okay, so when we got into Alberta Children's Hospital and they had him on life support, one of the doctors took major issue with the fact that we didn't vaccinate and the fact that we used natural treatments, and reported us to Child Protective Services and the RCMP, saying that there's criminal negligence and they need to get involved. The interesting thing was is that Child Protective Services came in, they performed their investigation, and they shut down the case a week later. The RCMP came in, they performed their investigation, and there was no recommendation for charges. So they basically dropped it. Almost a year after his passing, all of a sudden we have the RCMP phone us again and say, oh, we have recommendations from the Crown, and we need to see you. They charged us with failing to provide the necessaries of life, which is similar to criminal negligence in a sense. It's up to a five-year imprisonment, maximum imprisonment. And it's quite a serious charge.
They want to put you in prison for making a decision as parents to best take care of your child that you knew how, which was working at one time. But the doctors, who had no idea how to treat your son, even if you did go with the doctors, they want to punish you, maybe instead of the doctors, because I believe the doctors should be charged, because after you brought them to the doctors, they still didn't know what the hell was wrong with your child.
Well, yeah, so here's the major issue. So they never notified us. They notified us that there was brain death, that he was non-responsive, but they never notified us why. In fact, they were trying to get us to speculate why, and so we did. We said, well, could have been this, and we're like grasping at straws. Meanwhile, they're documenting everything, and we're becoming, not knowing that we're going to be incriminated for it, but they're documenting everything, and it's becoming a legal case, and we have no idea what's going on. We're extremely sleep deprived. We went a full night without sleep, almost two, actually. We were up till 4 in the morning. I was up till 4 in the morning at least. My wife up till 2 in RCMP interviews. This is following the day that we didn't have any sleep. And so now we're going on almost two full nights of no sleep whatsoever, been through extreme trauma. And they're documenting all of this information and, in many instances, misinformation or misinterpretations of information. And they're using against us. But here all along, they're aware that in the ambulance, he had gone for over 8 minutes without oxygen. Over 8 minutes. We could have kept on driving.
Wow.
And he would have been getting CPR, and we could have gone to the hospital, and he may still be here to this day. And
oh, my Lord.
We give him, we hand him over to the ambulance, and they were the reason why they weren't moving so quickly off the start is because their main objective was achieve an airway. And they could not achieve an airway because the ambulances had been destocked in the area when Alberta Health Services had taken over, or at some point during the transition, and so they didn't have toddler-sized air masks or endotracheal tubes, and so it wasn't until they got to the hospital that they actually acquired or achieved an adequate airway over 8 minutes later.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. Unbelievable.
And yet no investigation into the ambulance service, no charges for criminal negligence, even though they're aware of the fact that the ambulances were lacking that that equipment. Here's what the history was. One, for over a year previous, the paramedics had been requiring or requesting that equipment, saying, we need that equipment, we need that equipment, we need that equipment. It fell on deaf ears, they're requested. 1 week after the passing of our son Ezekiel, those ambulances in the area were equipped with that proper equipment. 1 week.
Oh.
It took the passing of our son for somebody to finally listen and to actually put the proper equipment in those ambulances. Yet, none of them stand on trial. None of them have been reprimanded. There's been no issues at all in regard to the state ambulance service. But yet, they have us on trial for the passing of our son, and yet the causation of brain death.
Okay, that's what I want to get to, David. Where do you stand? Okay, now that we've heard the foundation of the story, and I'm sure there's many other details, like you said in the beginning, you know, it'd take hours to go over all the details. And what's your position right now? What's going on right this second?
Well, what took place is we ended up in the courts, and based off an autopsy report that was produced by the medical examiner, he came out and said that he passed from bacterial meningitis and a right pleural empyema, which says that he had a lung infection for the entire time. And so the story goes that he degraded over the period of 2 weeks and that we basically just let him sit there and get to the point where he finally died. And so
which obviously you just explained the story, and of course I would believe you over any medical institution or governmental institution. So you're defending your case. Go ahead.
So here's where the issue lies. The jury was subjected to 3 weeks of that testimony based off of that autopsy report. Now, when we ended up getting on stand, we ended up hiring another forensic pathologist, perhaps the most qualified one in all of Canada. She has a founder's designation in the schooling that you find within Canada because she helped establish the schooling for forensic pathology in Canada. She took a look at all of the evidence, and she said, no, bacterial meningitis, everything appears to be viral meningitis based on all the evidence that we still have available to us today. There was more lymphocytes than there was neutrophils, which says viral, not bacterial. And the other medical examiner that did the autopsy said, nope, more neutrophils than lymphocytes. But she came back and said, no, not the evidence at all. And there is no scientific evidence to actually say that it was bacterial meningitis. And second to that, there was no right pleural empyema. The first x-rays that he had in Cardston and then Lethbridge show that there was no lung infection whatsoever. He had clear lungs. And so there was this embellishment to try to establish this story that unfortunately the jury was subjected to over and over and over, and we weren't able to adequately cross-examine all of the witnesses on this because we weren't even aware that all of this had taken place. We thought, well, maybe he did have bacterial meningitis, but it's an extremely atypical case because he didn't have the symptoms. He didn't fit the pattern of passing from bacterial meningitis. There was nothing to say that he had that. Now, to boot, viral meningitis, virtually nobody dies from it. Rarely will somebody ever go into respiratory arrest, and when they do, if they are intubated, if they get an airway soon enough, then they have a 100% chance of recovery without any long-term issues. They all correct themselves. So you can see the issue at hand that if it was determined that he had viral meningitis, the liability would 100% fall onto the shortcomings of the state ambulance service. But if they were to say he had bacterial meningitis and a right pleural empyema, they'd say, well, you guys were so negligent, by the time he got to the ambulance, he was fully dead, and there's nothing that we could have done. So regardless of any issues in the ambulance, it didn't make a difference in the long run.
Wow.
So back to the jury. The jury was subjected to this, and what they came out with was a guilty verdict against us for failing to provide the necessities of life based on whether or not we endangered his life at any given time throughout his illness by our actions or lack of actions in a time period that we could have sought medical attention that could have, not would have, made a difference. And so they found us guilty on that. And so now where we stand today is within about a week and a half, we end up going in for sentencing.
So what's the maximum sentence they can give you, or what do you anticipate them giving you?
We have really no idea where it's going to go at this point. I mean, ultimately, the maximum sentence that can be given is 5 years. I believe it can be so light as even, you know, probation or parole, possibly.
David, what I want you to do is pay attention to me and stay in contact with me on Facebook. I believe that your case should be heard again on other networks. And what I want you to do is contact my friend, the captain, from Freedom for All Network,
to have him hear your case also and say exactly what you told me tonight. And I'll contact the captain and make sure you're heard. Now, he broadcasts 7 days a week, basically. So you need to have your case heard on other networks also, okay? Sure. Because what we're trying to do is, like I said in the beginning, we're uniting the alternative media because our voice, we're making it stronger. So therefore, people like yourself who are suffering injustice, suffering tyranny, have a voice. You know, you would never get on Fox News or you'd never get on the national news in Canada to tell your story like you did just now. They'd interrupt you with commercials. They'd interrupt you with silly questions. So what we're trying to do here is have the alternative media worldwide, and we are, we're worldwide here, to have your story told and heard. And I'll support you, and I'll forward your case over to other people. And Terry LaPointe, I am thankful that she pointed me out to you. For some reason, I was like, Terry, bring this gentleman on. I want to hear his case. And so through the grace of God, you were able to tell your story tonight. Now, if there's anyone out there who has a question for my guest tonight, you need to press 1 now because we are running short of time. So you need to make your comment. I would really appreciate it if you did. So all you have to do is press 1. I know we're having a lot of problems in the chat room and with Blog Talk Radio. I'm frustrated over this because we get dozens and dozens of people who make comments in the chat room and actually listen to the show through the chat room. And we do have a lot of people on the phone line tonight. I don't know if they can get through because the phone lines are so jammed, but you have to press 1. I know I lost Joe in Sebastian, Florida. He got cut off. I was hoping to hear from him tonight. Mike out in Wisconsin, he's dropped. Another one of my supporters. So if you're one of my supporters out there, if you can offer this gentleman any type of advice or a question you want to ask him, please do so. Or you can email me at joegibsonishome@yahoo.com, and we'll try to support this gentleman. The case that you're when is the sentencing? What's the date for the sentencing on this case?
June 23rd and June 24th are the dates that are currently set out.
Okay, June 23rd and June 24th, folks. So that gives us plenty of time to try to contact. Who can we contact in your country that maybe we can voice our opinion or discuss with what has happened as the media? As the media, do you have anyone that you can recommend to me, or you can email me? Or Facebook me, who do you recommend I can contact, or any people out there that are listening tonight?
I believe the attorney general, possibly both provincial and federal, as well as the Minister of Justice and the Prime Minister, I believe where it really comes down to. This is an interesting case. We're the first ones that we're aware of that have been charged with failing to provide the necessities of life under a circumstance like this. We're the first ones, but there's been a few more that have taken place as well out of Alberta since this. And the common thread is that they've mentioned that they've used natural treatments and didn't vaccinate. And so there seems to be this profiling that's taking place, and it's interesting where they're going with it. And I mean, really, it just looks like it's a whole pharmaceutical agenda that's being pushed here, and it's quite concerning. So it definitely has to be put to a stop before everybody is basically scared into complying, with the standard medical model of, you know, follow the vaccine schedule, otherwise you may be held criminally liable. It's interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And this vaccination problem, you know, it's coming, it's here in America too, this vaccination nonsense. And like I said, I had Christina England on last week where we were talking about the vaccination problem. This is becoming a serious issue. And I know I'm losing some callers here. I lost some. If there's anyone here available to comment. I know I have many people on the line. I know I have some supporters. The chat room is closed. I don't know why. I can't see. I have people in the chat room, and I can't see them for some reason. So if you want to contribute tonight, you need to press 1. If not, I'm going to allow David to give his last words, and I'll post this on Facebook, and I'll post it on Twitter. I have over 2,500 followers on Twitter who will pay attention to your message. And the Prime Minister of Canada, what I will do, I will put you in touch with David Kelleher, okay? He is the former Secretary of State and Prime Minister of Canada. I forget which year it is. It's a few years ago. I don't know if you heard of him or not, David Kelleher. He's worked on a huge case about organ harvesting. I had them on the show with Mr. Mitchell and another attorney from the Chinese embassy, actually, where we talked about organ harvesting in China, where they're kidnapping people and harvesting their organs for medical science. That was quite a creepy show, but a show that needed to be addressed. And the Prime Minister of Canada, he had several press conferences in Canada about this. And I'm going to put you in touch with him tonight or tomorrow. I promise I will. And like I said, if anyone has a question, you need to do it now. Press 1. I know some people call in the last minute. You need to do it now. Otherwise, I'm going to let David here have the last words and tell our listeners tonight how he can get in touch. I've got someone now. You see, they all punch in at the last minute, and I can't stand that. But anyway, at least they're coming on 509, area code 509. I'm going to go ahead and connect you. Go ahead,
hey,
509.
Hey,
Sue,
David.
How are you? Hey, how are you? What do you think of the call tonight?
Okay.
I'm doing all right.
I am... You know how I am with FARC trying to fight the state and what they're doing to our children.
True.
And with the medical aspect, because I myself have been a victim of medical neglect. But there's just one thing that was said in this interview, and please, I'm a parent, I'm a grandparent, so please don't take it as me nitpicking or trying to find a problem, but it was just something that was said that will not leave my head. And I just would like, if this is the father, I would like for him to explain that statement to me, if possible. And I'm, like I said, I'm not trying to be cruel. I just don't understand the statement, how it was made. When you made the comment about when you finally met up with an ambulance, you tossed your son off to the ambulance. That don't sound right,
go.
Sir.
David,
I apologize for the wording there. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, so when we passed him off to the ambulance, I apologize, you know, for the wording there. What took place is the paramedic came out of the ambulance, and my wife was still performing CPR on him in the back. So I went and I opened up the back door and introduced the paramedic, where he then, took our son in his arms and walked him into the ambulance. And then began to try to achieve an airway. So that's what I was meaning by that. I apologize.
Okay, it is true. Our ambulance service is probably not just in Canada, because I'm in the United States. They are majorly lacking, and they're overcharging. You get an ambulance bill before you ever make it home from the hospital stay. And I had a heart attack and being told on the ambulance that they don't have nitro, that they don't have water. These are necessity things that you would think an ambulance would have. Anything that is supposed to help with a breathing or keeping a person alive, an ambulance should have it. And because of the neglect, some of us are ending up in intensive care, dead, or with permanent damage. And, yes, then they want to turn it and blame it on you, the person, or the parent. But, again, sir, you should really watch your wording, because if by chance that was kind of the same wording that came across when you spoke before, that probably has something to do with why they looked at you like, what? Because
it's possible,
wording is
Sue,
everything.
But it's possible. Sue, let me ask you this. Okay, your child's under arrest, and
and the mother is performing CPR, and the ambulance comes to try to help. You know, in the commotion of it all, I mean, yeah, you're knowledgeable, Sue. You're knowledgeable.
Right,
but
right.
What about
I'm
the
just
family,
saying, I'm,
you
I
know?
Have, I have a different vocabulary. You're right. So I'm just saying, I know having a Southern accent and having Southern slang to be talking in a court and say, you know, yeah, I give my child a whipping if they need it, meaning a spanking. Simply because you use the word whipping, you are a cold-blooded child abuser.
Yeah,
that's what
true,
I'm getting at.
True.
So to hear I tossed my kid off to the ambulance, it's almost like a sack of potatoes I threw in the back of the truck.
True.
That's how it came
that's
across.
True. That's
no, like I said, I'm not trying to pick on you as a father. I am so sorry for your loss. I have a child. I have had experience with bad ambulances, bad hospitals, bad doctors. But also in you knowing that if anything similar like that was said, that's probably why you're standing where you're standing right now, accused.
Well, they use
because
word games,
everything.
Sue. You're right. They use word games, and that's why this gentleman has come to people like us and Terry LaPointe, who writes for Medical Kidnap, who is helping people like this and families like this. And Sue, like you have your own problems, but you've been dealing with the system, Sue, for many, many years. This gentleman here. Has not and has suffered
right.
Such a casualty, a loss of a child. My mind, I'm going to tell you right now, Sue, my mind would go berserk. I'd be like, I
and
don't know how
I'm
this
saying,
gentleman.
That's why I'm saying I didn't want to come across like I was trying to attack the father or the family because I'm not.
No,
I understand.
Yeah.
You know, I came from the South, and at one point I didn't have a college understanding of words. I had to earn it, learn it, get it. And just like I said, a simple word of, yeah, if my kids are in trouble, they get a whipping, meaning a spanking, they took it and transformed those words to, I take a cow whip and beat my children with them, which was never the case.
Yeah.
So,
the
words are everything.
Go ahead, David.
They are,
go ahead, David.
Especially when we don't have the opportunity to examine them like you brought up here. If that was just left into the interpretation of the minds of those who have heard it, there would be so many different interpretations. Some people would say, what the heck, this child, yeah, you know, basically treats his son like a sack of potatoes, like you said, when I said, you know, pass him off to the ambulance. And you're absolutely right. So I'm glad that we had this opportunity to at least explore that. Unfortunately, there's many things in the statements where we didn't get such an opportunity until the court system, but yet there was already a narrative that had been established. And now we're
oh, and they
to
do
undo
that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
yeah,
do that.
Right.
They try to make up
you're
a
right.
good story and question you, and you have no idea what they're talking about. And they'll play it up like, oh, well, you knew, or you didn't know, so you're at fault because you didn't know what they're talking about. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
It doesn't matter
and
what
so,
you say. Do you know if somebody comes to your house saying, I heard you abused your child, and you as the parent innocent go, no, I didn't. Look, you want to see? Simply because you told them, look. Do you want to see? And that's a stranger. They got you right there because you'd let a stranger look at your child. Simply trying to prove you didn't do anything to your child.
Yep.
It's all in wording.
That's true. And Sue, not to interrupt you, but listen, I want to follow up on your case also because you were on a couple weeks ago with your problem on Thursday's show, okay? I want to know about
okay.
the warrant. I want to know about everything that's going on. And I've been looking up a lot of information, and people actually have been working on your behalf, okay? So I want
yes.
to let you yeah.
I was told yesterday that what has happened here is I have stirred a hornet's nest. And my response to them was, no, I didn't stir a hornet's nest. You did when you falsely accused me. You stirred it. Trying to take away my rights. The warrant is still pending. They have not actually issued it as far as someone to come to the house and pick me up. Now, if they catch me in public, that'll be a different story. They are waiting for me to go back to court and planning on having police officers in the court to try to have me arrested in the court. There are people here, yes, asking questions, and they are on to it, and some of them have even made comments that work in the courthouse of the unfairness and have been helping a person investigating. There have been a lot of drive-bys, unmarked cars, a lot of unmarked police cars, which are illegal. They're illegal,
well,
and it's been
I'm
brought up that these cars are illegal.
And Sue, that's what I'm getting at, is your case might be pretty big, and I want to touch, and you know what I did for you on the show. We contacted the sheriff's department. We contacted the prosecutor's office. So on Thursday, I want to touch base with you, or maybe you can email me, and let's put something together, okay? And
okay.
As far as my guest tonight, David, David, unless I have anyone else who wants to contribute tonight, press 1, otherwise I'm going to allow David to have comments too, and I'll begin, start wrapping it up. David, go ahead. I'm scanning callers right now, I'm scanning the screen. I was hoping I heard from a couple people tonight. Maybe they can't because of the background noise, I don't know. But David, go ahead, wrap it up for me if you don't mind.
Perfect, yeah, absolutely. We're definitely living in precarious times. Everything seems to be coming to a head here on so many different issues, geopolitical issues, medical issues. All of these types of things are really coming to a head. And, you know, it's really interesting to just see how it's all playing out. And probably the biggest lesson that I've learned through all of this, being right in the midst of it, is that we can't let these individuals, these organizations that are seeking to suppress us, seeking to basically undermine us, to make us out to look like crazies, and basically destroy this movement of freedom and liberty. We can't let them take the love from us. Throughout all of this, I've had a lot of feelings of hatred and anger and whatnot. I realized in those moments that at that moment I'd already lost. As soon as I get into that state of mind. And I think that this work is going to be won through love for liberty, love through the rights and freedoms that we experience, love for our children, our grandchildren. I think that needs to be the motivating factor, and that's what I'm really coming to learn and where I'm really coming to have peace, even though we're right in the throes of all this. So in my opinion, that's what it all comes down to is
knowledge of the system and what you said about vaccinations and your treatment of your child, treating them naturally with, you know, and that's what I'm worried about also. You know, I get a lot of advice from some people, even people that are on this line tonight, about, you know, hey, you should do this for your child. You should do this. Use this natural cure. Use these type of homeopathic medicines. But yet, when we're in trouble and the child gets sick, you know, and the state's coming down on us, where are you? Where are you, Mr. Advice? Where are you, all the people that got the advice and the Mr. Know-it-alls out there? You know, we try to do the right thing. Yes, yes, there is, you know, knowledge is very important, but at the same time, you're dealing with an evil system. And when you have children, out there who are innocent, and they rely on you for your advice. They rely on their families. You know, that is important. That is important. Very important. And you, sir, as a father, you did the best you can do, and your wife did the best you can do from the knowledge you have. But then again, like Sue said, yeah, you turn them over to the state, but listen, words are words, blah, 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 but still, your child is not here any longer, and you did the best job you could do, and I believe with all the knowledge and medicine and technology we have out there today, I believe you're a victim of these criminals. I believe you're a victim of these criminals, and they know it, and they're trying to make you out as an example. And you know what? The people out there, I know you must have received advice or some sort of educational knowledge from others out there about your homeopathic or your natural ways of treating your children. And guess what? Let me ask you a question real quick. And up front, I want to ask you, did you receive from family or other people, you obviously know a lot about natural stuff, natural remedies, and did you receive advice from those people and all of a sudden they're no longer here when you're in trouble? Or is this through done through your own studies and your own natural knowing? You understand what I'm trying to get at? It's hard to put it into words.
I absolutely understand where you're coming from there. And I'd say both. So based on my own set of knowledge, my set of knowledge moving forward, is what we were working with our son, as well as, there's other people that were given advice, as there always is. And then, when things get a little bit hairy, all of a sudden, nobody's around, right? Nobody.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you.
So.
You're absolutely correct, David. You're absolutely correct. They got big mouths. Oh, I got knowledge on this, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then when you're in trouble, where are they? Where are they, David? You're right.
You got to do this.
I understand fully. Trust me. I understand where you're coming from, David. But you know what? It's up. And in a way, you know what? That's what I talk about on this show, family and friends. What's your true family out there? You know, are your real family and friends out there supporting you to the end? Or are they just all a bunch of talk and gibberish trying to make themselves look good, and then when it all comes down to it, they're gone? You know, and when you're in trouble and you're sitting behind bars, you're going to know who your real family is. I'm going to tell you something right now, David. I'll promote this show. I'll stick by you. I'll put you in touch with David Kelliger. I'll put you in touch with Mitchell, I promise. And you know what? When the day comes, I want you to keep in touch with me because I want to continue posting about you, because Terry LaPointe promoted your story to me. And that's why I took notice. And I promise I won't let you down. I'll be there for you. You want me to contact somebody? I'll do it for you. You want me to send emails to somebody? I'll do it for you. I'm not a phony baloney like a lot of other people out there. Okay? So don't let you ever forget that. And, David, if you have anything else to say, other than that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show tonight because I don't see any other callers on the line. But, David, if you have anything else to say, go ahead and do it now. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the show. And I want to tell people I'm trying to get Donald Trump on here. I have a press pass for Tuesday's rally at the Greensboro Coliseum. I will be there, and hopefully I can get a microphone out there and I can interview Donald Trump, or I can get one of his campaign managers to call in. And Donald Trump is a presidential Republican nominee to run for president in the United States, and that's what I'm working on right now. Hopefully I can, but I do have press tickets for the rally. So those of you out there listening tonight, pay attention. You all talk about Trump. Well, you can ask your questions, and I'll forward them to him and his campaign. But, David, as for your story, if you have anything else to say, say it now, because we're wrapping down to the last 10 minutes.
Absolutely. I just want to really express my appreciation to you there, Joseph, for bringing us on and hearing our story, and especially for your love and support there and ability to act for us. Thank you so much. Also, I just want to put it out there as well, for those that want to keep up to date with what's going on, we have a Facebook page that seems to be a bit of a war zone. There's a bunch of trolls that seem to like the page as well, but called Prayers for Ezekiel, and we post updates as to what's taking place and to various things that we seem to keep on uncovering, as this case really hasn't opened up fully, it appears. There seems to be quite a background to it, and we're slowly getting bits and pieces of it. So, you know, the saying goes, hindsight's 20/20. In this case, I wish it was. All I know is, you know, looking back at it, I would have definitely done things different, but we still don't even fully know what took place that evening, how he ended up in that full situation that he was, or anything. And the medical system hasn't seemed to help out there, and rather seemed to engage in cover up for their own mishaps rather than just embracing it and saying, This is what took place.
So true. And David, yeah, the trolls. I know about your trolls. Trust me, I block them every night. But listen, yep. I've got one other person in the last 10 minutes that wants to check in. I wish they would check in earlier because then we got to punch it to the end. But I got one person that wants to check in. Area code 203-935. I'm going to go ahead and connect you real quick. We only got less than 10 minutes. I don't know if I can connect you. There you are. 203, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe. Love the show. I'm glad you're going to see bring some mace for all those people that are going to try to throw eggs at you. And just, you know what I mean? I voted Democratic because I was in the union, and it's coming down to Hillary and Trump, and Trump I'm voting for. I didn't get to hear your whole show, but I will next time, brother. All right. You have a good one, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother, Kurt, from Meredith, Connecticut. Thank you very much. Thank you for supporting the program. Thank you. I had some other supporters. I lost them. We had a lot of people on the line tonight, but David, God bless you. I will stay in touch. I promise. Okay? And if you want to come back on and give us an update, just contact me. Everyone has a voice on my program always. And we don't play around on here. I'll call people for you. You give me some numbers to call, I'll call them. We'll put them on the spot because this is Blog Talk Radio and we are worldwide. And I have had international guests. I've had politicians. I have veterans, nonprofit organizations. I've had churches all around the country. And, you know, I will fight for you. I promise. David, God bless you. And I support you. And I will be behind you and watch your back. If you need me, just contact me, okay?
Sounds wonderful. God bless you as well, Joseph. Sure appreciate what you're
doing
there.
Take care. Thank you.
All you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the fucking money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything you can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank. You know how I describe the economic and social classes in this country? The upper class keeps all of the money, pays none of the taxes. The middle class pays all of the taxes, does all of the work. The poor are there just to scare the shit out of the middle class. Keep them showing up at those jobs.
They're all the same. I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up.
Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's a handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. I'm not a conspiracy nut. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what the promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum fucks who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room in this little screen comes down and a big guy in a cigar rolled the film, and it's a shot of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before that looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll, and then the screen goes up and the lights come up and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
says this must be a fashionable fight. It's drawn the finest people. Where is thy salute?
For presenting yourselves on this battlefield.
I give you thanks.
This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage to Scotland.
And if this is your army, why does it go?
We didn't come here to fight for them.
Oh, the English are too many.
Sons of Scotland, I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his heart. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Right? Against that? No! We will run!
And we will live.
Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while.
And dying in your bed, many years from now, would you be willing?
Your number is someone will return your
call. Press pound for more options.
For one chance.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
But they'll never take our freedom!